you and me. As I was walking, now they tried to stop me. They put up a sign that said, oh, it said private property. Well, on the back side, you know, it said nothing. So it must be that side was made for you and me. For you and me, this land is your land.
WRCT Pittsburgh. No one is as excited about flaming cheese as we are.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
listening to WRCT Pittsburgh. You are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM, WRCT.org on the web. My name is Steve, your host for the Deep Blues Hour. 60 minutes of classic and traditional blues coming your way. And in this hour, we're going to hear from Pinetop Perkins.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem. One that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Welcome, everybody. So things in the Russian invasion of Ukraine have not gotten any better over the weekend. And I'm going to tell you what's been taking place and talk about what might be the most likely path towards de-escalation, given the personalities involved, particularly the personality of Vladimir Putin, and given what we have seen so far. But in order to have the conversation about how we might get out of this, we have to understand how escalated things have gotten and how committed to some degree Vladimir Putin is about pushing forward. And a major sort of, I hesitate to use the term red line because red line has had so many particular meanings in foreign policy over the last 15 years in the United States, but some kind of Rubicon has been crossed over the weekend with the start of Russian attacks on Ukrainian nuclear power plants and the concerns over an explosive disaster, proverbially and literally, have now become a significant part of the discussion as to what's taking place. There's an Associated Press report. Attack on Ukrainian nuclear plant triggers worldwide alarm. And why would it not? News from Kyiv. Russian troops Friday seized the biggest nuclear power plant in Europe after a middle of the night attack that set it on fire and briefly raised worldwide fears of a catastrophe in the most chilling turn yet in Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. Firefighters put out the blaze. No radiation was released. Russian forces pressed on with their week-old offensive on multiple fronts, although they did not appear to gain significant ground in fighting Friday. The number of refugees fleeing the country eclipsed 1.2 million. One of the realities that we have to sort of accept at this point is that this, you know, Pyrrhic victory may be too far, but the way in which Ukraine is now reacting to the attacks, if the invasion is ultimately going to be successful for Vladimir Putin, and of course, I hope that it's not, and I still believe that there's a good possibility that it's not, Putin is going to succeed in taking some extraordinarily damaged territory. And what I mean by that is when you consider the destruction to infrastructure that the Russian troops seem totally willing to make when it comes to nuclear power plants, roads, important government buildings, etc. And when you consider the refugee exodus from the country and the further damaging effect that that's going to have, if there aren't people to take care of things, then it's going to get even worse. There is a Putin who seems determined to have a, quote, victory, no matter how disastrous the victory is in terms of damage to Russian troops and the Russian economy and to what he's trying to steal, Ukraine, in and of itself. And the nuclear power plant is just sort of like the epitome of that, because consider the damage you could do by going after that. Another report, Russian forces fire rockets at building in Kharkiv that houses a nuclear reactor. This is extraordinarily dangerous stuff. And I know some will say, well, David, it's not that dangerous. I mean, it's still probably going to be fine. Yes. When you deliberately target these types of facilities, you're willing to accept serious and significant destruction. This article reads, Ukraine's National Security Service have claimed that Russian forces are firing rockets at a physics institute in Kharkiv, which contains nuclear material and a reactor. Footage purportedly shows the moment a missile hits the Kharkiv Institute of Physics and Technology, which houses the reactor. No immediate reports of damage to the nuclear materials inside. So one very important question now becomes, what is the off-ramp? Let's concede a situation where Putin is unable to take Ukraine successfully in a short period of time. Given the size of the Russian forces and the seeming determination of, for example, Joe Biden not to send troops in, which I support, to be clear, given all of that, it's not unlikely that if this did last at this scale months or longer, that at some point Russia would, quote, win Ukraine in the sense of stealing it. But it's not coming easily. And we're going to talk about that more. And given that, what sort of circumstances would be the most likely to get Putin to say, I'm going to back off now? Well, the first and the most important thing is Putin will back off seemingly if he's dead or if he has some face saving way of backing off, given that an attempted assassination does not appear to be the policy of any country that's been asked about it so far. And we will get to that because there was a big story on that over the weekend. How do you create an off-ramp for Putin where he can sort of save face? The best kind of average of everything that we know going on would be you have to make it as difficult as possible for Russia to make progress while making it as economically damaging as possible. Does that have unintended consequences of hurting the Russian people? Of course it does. What is already happening, what's already been done in terms of sanctions, hurts Russian people as well. Stories of, I mean, just anecdotally, even just Russians outside of the country unable to use debit cards. And I mean, at the micro level, it's hurting Russians. And at the macro level, it's going to do significant damage as well. Energy prices, all these different things. But it seems as though short of sending troops in to Ukraine and starting to fight a ground war of sorts, you need to continue sending support to Ukrainian troops and what are at this point significantly volunteers as well. Allow them to slow the progress of Russian troops as much as possible. Make it, I mean, it's crazy. The terms we're talking about lives here. Make it as deadly as possible for Putin to continue pushing, hurt the economy as much as possible, and pressure Putin to get some kind of incentive to take an off-ramp and then give him some way to do it while saving face. Now, what will that mean? Does that mean you've got to give him some land? I don't know. And this is where diplomacy would presumably take over. But that seems to be the path. Short of really waging a war in Ukraine, which right now it's not really a war, it's an invasion that Ukrainians are doing what they can to repel. Understand that this isn't a war came up because of aggressive behavior from both sides. No, Russia invaded Ukraine. That's what started this. There has to be some path that will suit Putin's personality. And I don't know what that is, but this isn't stopping Putin from trying to knock out the president of Ukraine, Zelensky. And that's what I want to talk about next. Last week, I told you that Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky survived an assassination attempt. There was this unit of Chechen special forces, the Kadyrovites, and they had been they established a plot to assassinate the Ukrainian president, Zelensky. And we now have learned that there have actually been three such plots, which the Ukrainian president has survived. This is being reported by the New Zealand Herald and many others. Russia-Ukraine war, and again, it's really Russian invasion of Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky survives three assassination attempts in the last week. The Ukrainian president has reportedly survived three assassination attempts in the past week alone. The Times in the UK reports that mercenaries from the Kremlin-backed Wagner Group and Chechen Special Forces both attempted to kill the president in the last week. According to reports, the assassination attempts failed because of subversive anti-war members within Russia's Federal Security Service, the FSB, which is the successor to the KGB. Some elements of the FSB didn't want this to succeed. They didn't want Zelensky assassinated, and they alerted Ukrainian officials. Fascinating. The Ukraine Secretary of National Security and Defense has confirmed three foiled assassination attempts. He told local media he received information from double agents who do not want to take part in this bloody war. According to reports, news of one of the assassination plans sparked the 36-hour curfew Kyiv was under last week so soldiers could sweep the streets for Russian saboteurs. Civilians were warned they could be liquidated if they were spotted outside during curfew, as they would be assumed to be the enemy. Sources say the Wagner Group mercenaries have been in Ukraine since January and are tracking Zelensky and colleagues via cell phones. And then on March 1, this is what I told you last week, a Chechen hit squad also tried to kill Zelensky but failed, as the FSB also reported their movements. You know, there's a couple of interesting things to talk about here. In the last 10 days, Putin says, I have no ill intentions. This is a military operation. And yet, in the last 10 days, Zelensky has survived three assassination attempts. Russia has bombed at least one kindergarten, at least one orphanage, as well as at least one, if not two, nuclear power plants slash sites housing nuclear reactors. Okay. So the framing that we have heard from the apologists for what Putin is doing as a very limited military operation, those can go in the toilet, the same place Trump puts his documents, right? But in all seriousness, it's impossible to even imagine what Zelensky and his family are going through right now. And the very interesting thing, you know, later we're going to talk about Lindsey Graham talking about assassinating Vladimir Putin. But yet we've had actual assassination attempts against Zelensky. I believe that if Putin were assassinated, that would cause a collapse to this entire invasion, but not the other way. And what I mean by that is as follows. Ukrainians actually understand what's going on. They understand that Putin has invaded. They understand what they're fighting for. And while Zelensky is the leader, the movement to defend Ukraine and resist Russian invasion would continue even if Zelensky were killed. If Zelensky were killed, they're still going to do everything they're doing to repel Russia, maybe even bolstered. Okay, that's what would happen if Zelensky were killed. On the other hand, many Russian troops and even some Russian generals don't seem to think this is a particularly good idea, the invasion of Ukraine. They don't even know what they're there fighting for. We have incredible video from a captured POW Russian troop who was like, I don't know. We were told all this stuff. We got here. It's not even really true. It's crazy. If Putin did die, the invasion would almost immediately end, whereas killing Zelensky won't actually have that effect. Let me know your thoughts. Find me on Twitter at @dpacman. We'll take a quick break. As many of you have no doubt by now heard, we are an independent media program. We depend on your support to do what we do, to do the podcast, the YouTube channel, the TV show, the radio show, all of it. And I would love it if you signed up for a membership at joinpacman.com. These are very cheap memberships and they come with great perks, perks of great strength, one might say, including access to the daily bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com. So radical Republican or maybe confused Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham strikes me more as confused than radical, I guess, although every once in a while he will say something pretty radical. He suggested assassinating Vladimir Putin and then all hell broke loose. And by the next day, there was no more talk of assassination. Instead, he was talking about arresting Vladimir Putin, a much more sober and modest suggestion. But I have to tell you what Lindsey Graham said is not dissimilar to what is going on in many intelligence agency's back rooms. It's just you can't publicly say it. I'm going to explain what I mean. So let's get to the first clip. This is Lindsey Graham in the evening. I think this was Thursday night, where he said, we need a plot. We need someone in there who's going to kill Putin the way there was a plot to kill Hitler.
How does this end? Somebody in Russia has to step up to the plate. Is there Brutus in Russia? Is there a more successful Colonel Stauffenberg in the Russian military? The only way this ends, my friend, is for somebody in Russia to take this guy out. You would be doing your country a great service and the world a great service.
Right. That's pretty full on for a senator in the United States to say the best path is assassinating Putin. Okay. So what is he talking about? Well, he's talking about Stauffenberg. Full name would be Klaus Philipp Maria Justinian Schenck Graf von Stauffenberg. This was a German army officer who, I guess we would say, executed a failed attempt in July of 1944 to assassinate Adolf Hitler at the so-called Wolf's Lair. So Lindsey is saying we need something similar. We need someone from inside Russia to take out Vladimir Putin. So this was completely irresponsible to say, and obviously it's being considered. I mean, let's not play dumb here, guys. There is no doubt that every serious intelligence agency, and I'm not defending them from doing it, I'm just telling you that it's obviously going on. Every serious intelligence agency is giving all options to their leaders. And one option is, could we, and if so, what would it take to assassinate Vladimir Putin? Or similarly, I mean, the idea that Lindsey's talking about is someone from inside Russia. Any serious intelligence agency that has moles, double agents, whatever, within Russia would be saying, do we have anyone inside of Russia close enough to Putin that they could potentially assassinate Putin? I'm not saying anyone is planning to do it. I'm not saying that it should be done. I'm saying when you are in a position of providing options to leadership, you provide every option. And almost always in situations like this, one of the options is, could we kill someone? And could we do it with enough plausible deniability that it can never be traced back to us? However, it's not something a senator should say. It's very stupid. It's extraordinarily dumb for Lindsey Graham to say it. But to just write it off and pretend these conversations aren't being had would be extraordinarily naive. Now, by the next day, Lindsey had completely backed off. Obviously, someone got to him and they were like, yeah, you can't say that. You can't say that. And Lindsey instead said, well, we should really be looking at arresting Putin.
Mr. Ambassador, you're supporting a war criminal in Putin. Your country's engaged in war crimes in front of the entire world. You're bombing innocent civilians using banned munitions. You have a record, your country does, of dropping barrel bombs on people in Syria. You've destroyed Chechnya by massive war crimes. You're committing war crimes in the Ukraine. You need to apologize to the world for how Putin has stolen your country blind, how they're dismembering a neighboring democracy called the Ukraine, how they're killing innocent men, women.
Other than continuing to say the Ukraine, Lindsey's basically right about his allegations as to what's going on.
And children, indiscriminate use of force in violation of the Geneva Convention. You, my friend, are the one who needs to apologize. And when it comes to Putin, he needs to go to jail.
Okay, so toning it down very much from the assassination talk to go to jail. You could liken this to the previous night, Lindsey was drunk texting, and then the next day he sent an email to smooth things over. Okay, and that's an analogy. I'm not saying literally he was drunk texting the night before. So he's essentially right. He was very wrong to talk about the assassination, but let's be adults here. Obviously, countries the world over are saying, would we be able to pull off an assassination, and what would be the risks and the rewards and the implications? And as I said earlier, three assassination attempts against Zelensky. I don't believe that if you kill Zelensky, you really change anything about Ukrainian resistance. In fact, I think you might bolster it because they would be so invigorated by what would be the insane killing of their president. I do think, on the other hand, that if you kill Putin, you do, in a sense, decapitate the Russian movement, the Russian invasion, because so many people in Russia clearly don't even want to be doing it. So that's what's going on. And Lindsay said the wrong thing, quite frankly. This is one of the strangest videos I have seen in a long time. In an absurd phone call, the story almost slipped through the weekend kind of quietly, but it's completely outrageous. Donald Trump had a phone call with professional golfer John Daly. Now, you might say, why? Well, maybe they were talking about golf. Actually, they were talking about foreign policy. Donald Trump was on the phone with professional golfer John Daly, and he talked about nuclear weapons and claimed that he once threatened Putin with bombing Moscow. That's the story. It makes no sense. It's almost beyond belief. Like, what? Why is Trump on the phone with Daly? Why are they talking about foreign policy? It's all bizarre. And of course, if it's true that Trump threatened Putin with bombing Moscow, that's a fascinating story, too. Let's take a listen to this. This is Trump on speaker speaking to John Daly, who increasingly looks like Glenn Beck, interestingly enough. And listen to what he had to say.
Crazy.
Yeah.
They're all saying, oh, he's a nuclear power. It's like they're a friend of him. You know, he was a friend of mine. I got along great with him. I say, Vladimir, if you do it, we're hitting Moscow. I said, we're going to hit Moscow. And he sort of believed me, like 5%, 10%. That's all you need. He never did it during my time, John, you know.
No.
They're all talking about it.
No, it's
Why
funny.
Why did he do this during the last 4 years? Because he knew he couldn't.
It's funny how Chi didn't bother you either.
I like how he says, by the way, Chi.
Yeah, no, she didn't bother me. I told him the same thing. That'll be next.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be next. Taiwan will be next. You won't have any computer chips. They'll blow them off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
You won't have a button.
Now, I actually agree with Trump. There's a real possibility that China is increasingly salivating over the idea of doing something with Taiwan, given what's going on in Ukraine right now with Russia. But how wild is this? Trump told Putin he would hit Moscow if this was previously unknown in terms of our geopolitical relations and foreign policy, that Trump had threatened Putin with bombing their capital city. But I mean, I looked and there's no record of that I was able to find. Now, it's possible Trump meant he told Putin he wanted to hit the Moscow strip clubs. That it is possible that that's what Trump meant. We don't want to rule it out. But I think he is talking about bombing. Now, the other someone wrote to me and said, David, is it possible Trump thought he was speaking with Jon Stewart from The Daily Show instead of John Daly? Like, maybe that's the explanation. And as funny as that is, I don't think it really makes a difference, because this is still something we did not know. Donald Trump supposedly told Putin. But do we believe this? Like, Trump even said, I was friends with Putin. I don't know. I mean, is that even really true? And this could be another one of these instances of Trump wanting to be the alpha in front of the pro athlete. It's all very, very strange. But Trump very casually mentioning something to a golfer that, if true, it's an incredible story. That would be incredible if that is a foreign policy discussion that took place. It's also silly to talk about this with John Daly, because Daly's an expert in Latin America, not in Russia. OK, anyway, now, of course, it might just all be a lie. Who knows? Why is Trump on the phone with a golfer and saying these things? How do these phone calls get scheduled in the first place? Do you think it's a random call, or what? What's the backstory? It's bizarre. And one other note, some people are reacting as if Trump said, I threatened Putin with nuking Moscow. It's not at all clear from what Trump says that he's talking about nukes. Now, maybe he is. I don't know. I don't think he's talking about nuking Moscow. He's talking about bombing Moscow. It's all crazy, is the point. And why Trump is having these conversations with pro golfers or former pro golfers, I genuinely don't know. But it is another reminder that it's going to take years for us to know the full scope of the absurdity that was foreign policy under Trump. If you're just listening today, we'll have this clip on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. And by the way, real quick, I'm going to say more about this tomorrow. We are launching a coaching initiative for up and coming podcasters, YouTubers, and content creators. We are accepting applications at davidpakman.com/coaching. If you are already a content creator, okay, that's the, now listen carefully to that. If you are already a content creator with a YouTube channel, podcast, or whatever, you can apply for free coaching from me at davidpakman.com/coaching. We're going to be doing recorded coaching sessions with a small curated group of creators. The goal being to grow your platforms and your shows and your content creation. So you can apply at davidpakman.com/coaching. It's a very cool new thing. I'm super excited to do it. Sort of like a giving back. I'm going to help people after I was helped. You can apply at davidpakman.com/coaching, and I'll have more information about that for you tomorrow. So Donald Trump's former Attorney General William Barr is now coming out and saying all of those election lies Trump was telling, they were lies. They were BS. He had these lawyers working for him, but the lawyers were a, quote, clown show. That's a quote from William Barr. And everybody now is saying, here's a guy willing to tell the truth about guys. He wrote a book, and now he wants to sell the book. And like everybody else, he kept the most interesting stories for the end. Now, did he actually object enough to what was going on with Donald Trump while he was working for him to say no more? Well, only at the absolute end. Remember, William Barr didn't resign until December 23rd or something like that of 2020. And he seemed to be wanting to get the hell out of there before whatever was going to happen on January 6th happened. But he went along with it all along. He was willing to work for Trump and on and on and on. And we can't let these guys be rehabilitated. But what William Barr says is really interesting. Here is an interview that William Barr did with NBC Nightly News host Lester Holt, where he says it was all BS.
And I told him that all this stuff was bullshit and about election fraud. And, you know, it was wrong to be shoveling it out the way his team was. And he started asking me about different theories, and I had the answers. I was able to tell him this is wrong because of this.
You're trying to set him straight.
Yes. And you know, he listened. He was obviously getting very angry about this. I said, OK, well, look, I understand you're upset with me, and I'm perfectly happy to tender my resignation. And then, boom,
he slapped the desk
and he said, accepted, accepted. And then, boom, he slapped it again. Accepted. Go home. Don't go back to your office. Go home. You're done.
So that is a firing, folks. Now, remember that at the time we were when this happened, when it was announced William Barr is leaving, we all understood this is a firing at this point in all likelihood. And indeed it was. It is just another one of these examples where some see this and say, what a great guy, what a hero, William Barr, willing to tell the truth. He's willing to tell the truth, 15 months later, because he's trying to sell a book. Would have been useful to hear this stuff at the time. And there is another segment of this interview where he talks about the clown show of lawyers that Donald Trump brought out. And it was quite a clown show.
And about election fraud. And, you know, it was wrong to be shoveling it out the way his team was.
And then he also told Trump what he thought of his legal team. Not a lot.
I said, the reason you are where you are is because you wheeled out a clown show of lawyers.
A clown show?
Yeah. Clown car or something like that. I said, it's just a bunch of clowns.
Who are you referring to? Rudy Giuliani?
His Cracker Jack legal team, among others.
Barr says the president shot back, listing.
So, guys, obviously Barr is right, and it's funny to hear him talk about those clown lawyers in these terms. But he was complicit with so much of what went on for so long. He misstated what was in the Mueller report. You know, he's not a good guy.
Ways he said Barr had failed him. That's when Barr says he offered up his resignation.
I said, OK, well, look, I understand you're upset with me, and I'm perfectly happy to tender my resignation. And then, boom,
he slapped the desk
and he said, accepted, accepted.
Which we heard already.
Boom, he slapped it again. Accepted. Go home. Don't go back to your office. Go home. You're done.
When we asked the former president about this meeting, he disputed Barr's account and told us he was the one who demanded Barr's resignation. Either way, Barr handed in a resignation.
Yeah, either way, it was a firing.
Letter 2 weeks later and has not spoken with Donald Trump since. He does not want him to run for president again.
All right. So listen, why is William Barr doing this now? It's because he wrote a book and he wants to sell a book. And there's this sort of rehabilitation tour. And maybe part of it is also distancing from Trump for future opportunities or whatever. But it's almost certainly just to sell a book. That's the theme. They hold on to the juicy stuff or their indignant and principled statements until they have a book to sell. I think they mostly do tell the truth. William Barr or whoever, Stephanie Grisham wrote one, and now I don't even remember all the people who have written books. It's just at a particular time for a particular benefit, they start telling all of those stories. Now, the other aspect of this is any opportunity that Trump has to talk about Barr, Trump will almost certainly throw Barr under the bus. So it's like, why hold back at this point anyway? But remember, Barr is not a good guy. It's like, hey, Mitt Romney said one thing that makes sense, but he's still a guy I don't really agree with politically. All of the former Trump people at work are worse because they worked for Trump. Barr lied to Congress with regard to important parts of the Mueller report. He lied in that letter that he put out. Remember the letter summarizing the Mueller report, which wrongly said that it cleared Trump of obstruction, which the Mueller report very clearly did not. So if you're actually interested in this book, I'd wait a few weeks. It almost certainly will show up in the 99 cent area within a few weeks or a couple months. That's almost always the way it happens with these political books. I will not be buying the book. And in terms of the movement that Barr is now part of, I would be willing to concede that Barr seems to be exiting the worst of the worst Trumpian fringe. Sure, he resigned slash was fired. He calls out BS when he sees it. Okay, fine. But he's taking a step back to the Pence-McConnell Republican Party, which is almost as bad. It's people who are in denial about this being Donald Trump's party. It's clueless people. It's people who were willing to go with whatever Trump wanted for as long as it was sort of beneficial to them and gave them access to centers of power or whatever the case may be. He's marginally less crazy, I guess, because he's willing to say this. So for all we know, they're bailing on Trump because they plan to build consensus around Republicans nominating some kind of centrist in 2024 instead of someone like a Trump or a DeSantis. But these are not good people, and William Barr deserves barely any praise. William Barr has done 1% of all that William Barr has done since working for Trump as attorney general. 1% of what he said and done makes sense and seems sort of like morally grounded. And so he can get that 1% praise from us. Good thing he's saying this. He's saying it now to sell books. And I wouldn't trust this guy as far as I can throw him. I want to talk about a really serious issue, which is that we now know, that there are people on the political right willing to do violence merely over political disagreements. And that's why I was particularly worried when I saw a headline indicating that the Nevada governor, a Democrat, Steve Sisolak, was confronted and had his life threatened at a restaurant over the weekend. And part of the content here is the fact that Sisolak is out at a restaurant without security. And it's sad that he probably needs security all the time, but it is what it is. And I'm going to play the video for you in a moment. Two men accosted and berated Steve Sisolak and his wife, Kathy, hurling racist language and threats as they followed him out of a restaurant into a parking lot. This is really ugly video. Nevada Governor Sisolak and his wife, Kathy, were involved in a harrowing encounter. Two men screamed racist and violent threats. In a statement shared to Twitter, the communications director explained it happened Sunday when he was walking through a restaurant to have dinner. The governor was approached by a customer in the establishment who asked to take a photo. It then became clear that the guy was just kidding around about wanting to take a photo and started berating him and saying, "Are you in here without security?" Following him, another guy started yelling, swearing. Of course, there was COVID disinformation riddling the harassment about hydroxychloroquine, etc. When they started to leave, Sisolak's wife is Asian, and one of the guys started yelling, "China piece of S. We should string you up by lampposts, etc." Let's take a look at the video. This is pretty horrifying stuff.
You see Sisolak, right? That's amazing. I can't tell you what a piece of shit you are.
Sorry to hear that.
You New World Order traitor piece of shit bastard.
So, New World Order, conspiracy number one.
You're in here without security?
You know what? Woo!
Yeah, you piece of shit. I'm surprised you have the balls to be out here in public, huh? Out here without a cop? Out here without security?
Now, one of the other things is, many of you are probably saying, I had no idea Sisolak was the governor of Nevada. Like, he's not even a controversial guy. He's a completely just basic Democratic governor. He's not particularly progressive or anything. And so it's not even really about any particular policy.
Woo! You got balls on you, boy! I'm not moving.
Wait till we find all the money that flowed his way from
Oh, man.
Yeah, hiding the
hydroxychloroquine. Oh, you in trouble?
Money that flowed his way for hiding the hydroxychloroquine. These are sick people, guys. You can't go, hey, you know what? Let's talk about our political differences. Again, to use this sort of banal example, it's not, hey, you know what? You want a 42% top tax rate. I want a 20% flat tax. Let's talk about the origins of our disagreements. This is not that. This is you've hidden the money for you've received money for hiding hydroxychloroquine. You can't talk sense to these people. They're beyond reach.
Yeah, you better get the fuck out of here, Sisolak.
Probably a good idea to go somewhere else.
Where's your security at, huh? Where's your, don't touch me, lady. Where's your security at, huh? She's you want to sell us all down the river? You working for China, piece of shit.
Working for China, so third conspiracy.
You
So we've got New World Order, receiving money and slash for hiding hydroxychloroquine, working for China.
We should string you up by lamppost right now, pussy boy.
And there's the death threat. String you up by a lamppost, sort of an alluding, quite frankly, to a lynching.
You know what they do to traitors?
They hang them. Traitors. That's right, Patriot.
I think it's awesome.
You running into a Patriot now, huh? Hey. Huh? Where's your security at? I heard about you banging that little girl and then wrecking your car. Does she know about that? Huh, Steve? Mr. Sissy Lack? You treasonous, China-working, cock-sucking motherfucker. Where's your security at, bitch? Woo! You lucky I'm a law-abiding citizen. Woo! Because your daughter's with you, I'm going to leave you alone now.
Respectful guy, huh? Your daughter's with you, so now I'm going to leave you alone.
Patriot.
This is considered patriotic in some parts of the country.
Chief. Yeah, baby.
F*** that guy.
That's fucking amazing.
So a lot of people like that. I mean, that's considered that. Now, these are the same people who, if someone just shows up with a sign outside Mitch McConnell's house, they'd go, whoa, these are private people and they're being bothered. And that's really bad. The tone is bad and you shouldn't be allowed. No. And look at what is going. These are truly dangerous people. And, you know, I know enough people both in media and in politics to know that you're supposed to like not. You're not really supposed to admit that you're scared by that. But I've spoken to people in media and politics who go, this happened to me and I was scared by it. I really was, because these people are crazy, particularly in states where everybody's got guns, you know, or at least a lot of people do. This is genuinely horrifying stuff. And I know that some of you are going to write to me and say that was actually a right wing podcaster, the guy who did it. I don't even care. I don't know the guy's name. I don't. Whether he's a podcaster or not, I'm not even going to mention the fact that that guy might have some kind of show or anything like that. This is really, really disgusting stuff. It's dangerous stuff. And I fear, and I mean, listen, it's happened before that violence is done against people. You can go back to the 80s, Gabby Giffords, et cetera. There's so many of these examples. These people are dangerous. We can't for a second be allowed to think it's just rhetoric. They're just expressing differences of opinion. Differences of opinion. Hiding money, taking money for hiding hydroxychloroquine. You're working for China. I mean, come on, guys. Very, very dangerous stuff. And I don't know how we root that out. I really don't. That's not a person you can sit down with and have a rational conversation with. So I'm open to ideas from you guys. How do we fix this stuff? I don't know. Okay, we have really substantive follow-up to a major story from either last week or the week before. Not too long ago, you might remember that I reported to you that two prosecutors working on the Manhattan District Attorney's criminal probe of Donald Trump's organization resigned. They said, we quit. We're not doing it anymore. And we went that story. This was from, February 23rd, so 2 weeks ago. And in this original reporting, two prosecutors resigned. This was a years old probe. We didn't know why. As far as was announced, the investigation was still ongoing, and it was sort of a real question mark. And at the time, my speculation, remember, speculation was these prosecutors realized they're not going to indict Trump. They're not going to charge Trump. And they felt my work is being done in vain. I'm getting the hell out of here. That was my speculation. And I identified it as such, to be clear. The speculation on the right was they quit because they knew there was no evidence against the Trump organization. And they felt they were being railroaded into. There was no evidence of that. There was no evidence of my hypothesis. But I argued to you that my hypothesis is far more plausible. And my hypothesis has now been vindicated, and vindicated exactly. Prosecutors resigned, says a new article, after New York DA said he wasn't prepared to move forward with the indictment of Donald Trump. We now know the reason, and I got lucky. It happened to be the reason I said. Two top prosecutors leading the criminal probe into Trump and his business resigned after the Manhattan District Attorney said he was not prepared to authorize an indictment against the former president, a person familiar with the investigation said. And there it is. Carrie Dunn and Mark Pomerantz, two senior prosecutors on the team, resigned last month, one day after Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg informed them he's not prepared to move forward with criminal charges. The resignations followed weeks of internal debate and discussion over the strength of evidence and whether it could pass the hurdle of proving a crime. Now, I want to be really clear. It's possible that the DA is correct. We don't have enough to prove a Trump crime here. That may well be. But the question was, why would they resign? Would they resign because there's nothing here to investigate? Doesn't seem likely because they've been investigating for a long time. If that was the reason, they would have known there was no evidence a long time ago. Or is it more likely that they were getting frustrated with the fact that they've been investigating for so long? They have what they might see as a solid case built up, and yet no one is willing to indict. And that appears to be it. Now, interestingly, there's some detail here about why this is. The abrupt resignation. Okay, where's the section here? Was originally started by Cy Vance. We know that. The New York Times first reported that the resignations followed a decision by Bragg to stop presenting evidence to the grand jury. The strength of the evidence against Trump has been debated by attorneys in the office for months. Some prosecutors, including the two that resigned, believe there was sufficient evidence to charge Trump, while others, including career prosecutors, were skeptical they could get a conviction because of the difficulty in proving criminal intent. That's another thing we've talked about. A lot of the crimes here that Donald Trump could be charged with really require you to show what his state of mind and intent was. And that can be very, very difficult. On the one hand, some prosecutors believe Trump speaks with a lot of hyperbole, but it wasn't clear that they could show he acted with intent to defraud. There's also a very important piece here about Michael Cohen. And this, I think we should talk about a little more. Multiple factors were at play, including lack of key Trump organization insiders cooperating with the investigation, who at trial could walk the jury through the evidence. The possible value of using Michael Cohen, Trump's former personal attorney, who in testimony before Congress alleged Trump inflated and devalued assets for his advantage, was discussed with the team. Cohen pleaded guilty to 9 charges, including lying to Congress. He was once close to Trump, but his conviction and public statements critical of Trump would give the defense ammunition to aim to discredit him. That is a very, very interesting piece of this. The idea is, if you don't have a cooperating witness from inside Trump's business, you do have all sorts of claims from Michael Cohen. But Michael Cohen, if you read between the lines, what they're saying is would be easy to discredit and destroy his credibility in a cross-examination on the basis that he has perjured himself. He has lied. He has a long history of all of the trouble that ultimately got him convicted. The counter to that be, well, those are all crimes he committed for Donald Trump. But I think it's a very legitimate question to say, what is a jury going to think if Michael Cohen is their main witness and is cross-examined about all the times that he lied? Well, so you told the lie then. How are we to believe that you are telling the truth now, et cetera, et cetera? So the point here is, this is number one, exactly what we believe was going on. Prosecutors getting sick of the fact that they're doing their work and nobody really seems willing to prosecute. That seems to be going on. And then number two, this is why I continue to say Donald Trump is not going to spend a single day in prison. And I apologize to people who think I'm causing that to be the truth. No prosecutors are listening to me. They're going to decide what to do regardless of what I say. I see it as a very high bar to reach that a prosecutor will say, I'm going to be the first to indict a former president. I think if one did it, others would fall. But who is willing to be first? We haven't found anybody quite yet. And that's the latest with the prosecution. That's in Manhattan. There's Georgia, Southern District of New York. There's all these other things going on. But at least as far as what's going on in Manhattan, a logical follow up to the story from February. Here's a little interesting video. The video I'm about to play for you is of radical Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz. And he was very mildly confronted about the fact that he continues to insist that Trump won on local TV. And this is being reported sort of all over the place as Matt Gaetz gets humiliating reality check to his face on live local TV. Or on alternate, Matt Gaetz slapped with epic reality check after echoing Trump's voter fraud claims. It's not really what happened. Now, I appreciate that Gaetz was pushed, you know, challenged at all on his lies about 2020. But basically what happens here is Gaetz says, I believe Trump won. And the interviewer goes, yeah, but that would require like a lot of conspiracy, you know, a lot of people acting together. And then Gaetz just spews a ton of nonsense. So it's not a major reality check. Let's take a look at it.
So you're still maintaining 2020 election was stolen. Are we still going with that?
Listen, I believe that Donald Trump won the 2020 election. I believe that he won the electoral college.
You can't say that without saying that there was a gigantic conspiracy across this country and supervisor of elections offices everywhere
right.
to make this happen, and we haven't still seen any evidence that proves that.
Yeah, because so many of the courts that should have taken those matters up rejected evidentiary hearings on jurisdiction grounds. I mean, I know the affidavits that came out of Michigan regarding the TCF Center in Detroit.
Now, remember, this brings us back to affidavits are not evidence. And yes, affidavits can be introduced and examined, but affidavits are not actually evidence. And this is just another one of the lines that they keep repeating. It's almost taking me back to December of 2020. We have affidavits. Affidavits are not, strictly speaking, evidence.
Established a factual basis to be able to go and have evidentiary hearings. But too often, I think judges just didn't have the courage to take it up.
Courage.
And it's most unfortunate. But I'm still engaged in the fight on election integrity going forward.
Oh, yeah.
Because Florida used to be the laughingstock of elections. And Governor DeSantis fired the elections officials who didn't run clean elections. And now, lo and behold, Florida's a model for the country. So I want to bring Florida's message and our story.
Can you imagine? Florida as a model for the country. So listen, I mean, like, it's great that he was asked, where is your evidence for that? But at the same time, that was not exactly a brutal reality check that it's made out to be. Now, notice the language Matt Gaetz uses. He says, I believe Donald Trump won. They are the ones who always say facts don't care about your feelings. And yet he believes Trump won, absent any actual facts that would point that way. One other thing, there is this whole, so Matt Gaetz has a lot going on. One of the things is he's being investigated for the potential child sex trafficking and all of that. He's hired a child, you know, sex crime defense attorney and all these different things. On the other hand, he's also palling around with Marjorie Taylor Greene and telling lies about the election. The third thing is there's still this very strange story about how he says his dad was extorted by someone, or there was an attempt to extort. He's also asked about that during this interview.
Any updates on the Department of Justice investigation?
Well, the one big update is that since we talked last, the individual who had been indicted for trying to extort me pled guilty to extorting me and my family. And I hope that that investigation is ongoing, because other people literally went on national television and said they were working with Steve Alford in this deal. Those people should be the next to be indicted.
Okay, so he hopes, but I guess doesn't know if the investigation is still going on. It would be really great for one of these cartoonish Trumpian right wingers to have a really big fall from grace. And we've talked before about fishy stuff with Marjorie Taylor Greene and taking two homestead exemptions, which you can only take one. And I'm not going to go back through what a homestead declaration of homestead is and all of that, but you're only allowed to have one. That was being investigated. You know, did it fall into some kind of investigative black hole? We don't know. Lauren Boebert, a whole bunch of different campaign funds related things. Will anything ever come of it? We don't know. Madison Cawthorn, whole other thing. You know, the Russian honeypot. I mean, we can't even get into that right now. Matt Gaetz, the one facing the most serious criminal charges, potentially. It would be a really interesting thing to see if one of these, you know, the major cartoonist Trumpists, the younger cartoonist Trumpists are people like these, not cartoonists. This guy's no Bill Watterson, that's for sure. But the most cartoonish Trumpists are Boebert, Gaetz, Green, and Cawthorn at this point, sort of. If one of them had a real big fall from grace, particularly if they had criminal charges against them or some other major scandal, it would be interesting to see how Trump would react in general to that group, probably initially saying they're being railroaded, but over the long term, maybe he would sort of step back from supporting that group. Unclear. We will see. We will follow it. But hey, at least they asked Matt Gaetz to try to defend the claim that Trump won in November. He didn't do a great job, but he tried. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. Here's an interesting observation from one of our viewers about what they see as a decline in obvious online trolls coinciding with Russian sanctions. Take a listen.
Hi, David. Is it me, or have you also noticed a lot less, if not almost a complete halt, of these so-called all-American or right-wing trolls that used to plague social media and, to be honest, the internet in general? Well, everywhere I've been going, whether it's Reddit, Facebook, or YouTube, et cetera, I'm noticing less and less of these online trolls. Suspiciously, it seems to me that they correlate with the sanctions against Russia. Do you think this could be a coincidence? Do you think these are paid actors? We know for a fact that a lot of these are paid actors. I just thought I'd like to know your take on that, and if you've noticed that, or some of your viewers have noticed that as well.
So interestingly enough, I have noticed that. How can I even explain this? When you do what I do, you start to get a sense when you take a 30,000 foot view of the replies that I get on Twitter and the YouTube comments and the Reddit posts. You start to get a very top level view of sort of like what's the theme. And it is very much true that what was previously overwhelmingly this kind of like nationalistic, pro-American, anti-communist sort of propaganda that sometimes is associated with Russian troll farms like the Internet Research Agency and others. That stuff does seem to have declined a little bit. And instead, what we're seeing is very similar type of activity, like brand new accounts that only post to our subreddit, or brand new accounts that are leaving almost identical, different accounts leaving almost identical pro-Putin messages on our YouTube channel. There seems to have been a shift from some of that hard right, all-American nationalist trolling to kind of like pro-Putin, pro-Russia trolling that spreads disinformation about Ukraine and insists Ukraine is filled with Nazis and kind of furthering that stuff. I would be lying if I said I didn't notice it. That being said, I want to be really careful, because there also could be sort of like an availability bias of sorts, where we're covering Russia-Ukraine more. So it may just be that I'm looking at more comments related to that part of the world, and so I'm noticing them more. But I would be lying if I said I didn't notice the exact same thing the caller is saying. So if there were truth to it, if we could empirically show the American nationalist trolling is down and the pro-Putin trolling is up, it's theoretically possible that this is just a shift in the priorities of these Russian troll farms, which are very sophisticated, quite frankly, and they're just kind of shifting their message. That's totally plausible. It also could be that all of us are just paying attention more to Russia and Ukraine. And so if you're watching 10 Russia-Ukraine videos a week instead of none, and then you look at the comments, you're going to notice a lot more pro-Putin propaganda naturally than the hard right American stuff, because that's just the subject matter of the videos you're looking at. So I think what the caller is saying is interesting. We'd have to study it empirically. And that's not something that I've done. But I'm curious to hear whether people in the audience are seeing the same thing. On today's bonus show, calls for the United States to ban Russian oil are gaining momentum, despite concerns about it accelerating inflation even more. We will also talk, as we have spoken before, about the reality that not every military conflict or invasion or war gets the same media coverage. We'll talk about why, and we'll talk about the consequences of that. And lastly, high schools could lose AP classes, advanced placement classes, if they ban so-called required topics from being taught. And we're going to talk about what those topics are and much more. I will reminisce about my AP econ class that I took in high school, which first got me interested in economics and led to me doing economics at the undergraduate and graduate level in college. AP really had a big impact on me, and losing those classes would be a very, very bad thing. You can get access to the bonus show instantly by signing up at joinpacman.com.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all RDJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
CT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all RDJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Unfortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I'm deeply concerned about civilians trapped in active hostilities in numerous areas, and I urge all parties to take effective action to enable all civilians, including those in situations of vulnerability, to safely leave areas affected by conflict.
As the number of refugees fleeing Ukraine tops 2 million, the United Nations urging Russia and Ukraine to allow all civilians trapped by the fighting safe passage. As we mark International Women's Day, we'll go to Ukraine to speak with an LGBTQ activist who just fled Kyiv to Lviv. Then we go to Moscow to speak with the head of the Memorial Human Rights Center, which has been ordered shut down as part of a widening crackdown on Russian civil society.
We see that all these harsh repressions and growing pressure towards the anti-war protesters and independent media voices was also prepared by the kind of pressure that we experienced before, by the foreign agent law, by the law on undesirable organizations, by the laws that included journalists and all kinds of activists to these categories.
Plus, we speak with Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, the first African refugee to become a member of the U.S. Congress. We'll talk to her about the Russian invasion, the plight of refugees across the globe, and the recent U.S. bombing in her home country of Somalia.
Bringing our attention to Somalia, am I correct that all of the airstrikes conducted there under President Biden had been justified under the doctrine of collective self-defense?
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Ukraine has accused Russian forces of shelling evacuation routes for civilians seeking to flee the Russian invasion. Ukraine's foreign ministry says Russia violated a ceasefire agreement to grant safe passage to civilians in the southern coastal city of Mariupol for a fourth day in a row. Speaking from his office in the capital, Kyiv, on Monday night, President Volodymyr Zelensky slammed Russia for reneging on an agreement, he said, for a humanitarian corridor and for the Kremlin's offer to evacuate civilians only to Russia and Belarus.
They even mined the road that it was agreed would be used to bring in food, medicines for children, for the people of Mariupol. They even destroyed buses that are meant to evacuate people. At the same time, they opened a tiny corridor leading to the occupied territory for a couple dozen of people.
Residents of Mariupol describe a dire humanitarian situation with constant artillery fire, no heat or electricity, despite freezing temperatures. Some residents have reportedly been forced to drink from puddles amid shortages of food and water. Elsewhere in Ukraine, at least 21 people, including two children, were killed in an overnight strike in the northeastern city of Sumy. Another Russian attack killed 13 civilians at an industrial bakery in the town of Makariv, west of Kyiv. Four civilians were killed by Russian mortar fire Sunday as they tried to cross a partially destroyed bridge over the Irpin River. Despite the killings, hundreds of civilians continued to make the journey Monday.
We are from Irpin. There was heavy shelling in Irpin. They fired at